Overheard at Yoga is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Boise. Speak Boise is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Boise, and at their website, speakstudios.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. This podcast is also brought to you by Instant Imprints. Promote better with Instant Imprints. Instant Imprints are Boise's visual communications expert and your place for everything you need to promote your business, club, school, or group. As a locally owned business, Instant Imprints specializes in making your organization more visible with custom branded apparel, embroidery, promotional items, print services, and wide format printing for signs as well as banners and vehicle graphics. Want better ways to get noticed? Visit Instant Imprints at instantimprints.com/Boise or call 208-IMPRINT. That's 208-467-7468. It's your girl, Christina. This is Overheard at Yoga. So let's crank up the heat and get down, dog. Hello, welcome back to Overheard at Yoga. This week, I'm super psyched to have Tom Wheeler with us. He's one of my favorite yoga students. Tom, please say hello, introduce yourself a little bit.
Hey, everybody. Hey, yogis. My name is Tom Wheeler. I'm originally from Minnesota, moved out to Boise about a year ago, and I was actually listening to one of your episodes with Candace and Lydia. And how they relocated and or maybe more Lydia, but talking about finding that home studio.
Yes.
And what that's like.
Yes.
And that's when we crossed paths. I guess October of last year.
So when did you move to Boise, Idaho from Minnesota?
I think it was, we were coming back and forth for trips, and I don't think we officially moved back until, well, I say move back. My partner's originally from here. Yeah. A little backstory. My partner's originally from here, lived in LA for about 10 years. Mm-hmm. We met out there at Pride. Mm-hmm. And then about 2 weeks after meeting, it was very spiritual, which we can kind of get into. But
yes.
We came out to Boise, where he's originally from. I'd never been. And I think with most people who aren't from Boise or really familiar with the state of Idaho are like, Boise? Like, what's in Boise?
Is that in Iowa?
Where is that? Idaho. Where? For
Ohio.
Whatever reason. Yeah, people just can't really put the state on the map.
Yeah.
So we had done a few trips and officially planted our roots, I would say, in August.
Mm-hmm.
I think. And it's so crazy because we have like this COVID timeline where this past couple years or year feels a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like kind of a blur.
A decade.
Yeah.
So you moved here during COVID and our studio was shut down for a little bit. When did you start coming to our yoga studio?
I think October was when my membership like officially started.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'd heard from a mutual friend, like, if you're going to do yoga, you've got to go to Hollywood Market.
You got to go to Hollywood Market Yoga in Boise, Idaho.
Yes. And the other thing was the convection heating.
The infrared heat.
The infrared. Okay, my mistake.
Yes.
So, infrared heat. I think that's something that's so key in a practice. But it was something I was seeking. I had a similar yoga studio set up in Minneapolis where I'd practiced for a couple years, and having gone to classes where it was just your traditional like air heater, I felt that the infrared just really elevated the heated element.
I'm so glad you're here because I am really fascinated to know your journey to yoga. I feel like you're really young. You're what, 24. You're a little baby, but you're not. You have this old soul and you're very accomplished and you are a bit of a visionary. Oh my gosh, what's your sign?
My sun sign is Cancer and my moon sign is Pisces. So I'm a water sign.
Really? So you're just flowing.
Oh my gosh. We talk about this in therapy with my partner. There was a friend of ours who was formerly a social worker with young children. Anyway, she was our therapist before we had a therapist, and she talked about there's this, you're either a gardener or you're a contractor in a relationship. And maybe that's equated to type A, type B.
Yes.
And I'm very much a gardener. So I will put on a pair of shorts and go out into the sun and plant some seeds and some water here and there and see what grows. And my partner's very contractor, very, here's the blueprint, here's the plan. no wrong to either process.
Okay.
Just the way that it functions together is interesting. But mm-hmm. I'm very much a gardener. And it's funny you say old soul. My parents will say the same thing. Like when I was young, it was like, you're this old soul. I've always felt spiritual.
Okay.
And that's kind of what led me into yoga. I actually started journaling in a journal, like handwritten, when I was, I think, in 6th or 7th grade. And mm-hmm. I've written every day with breaks, but no more than usually a week. And I can tell when I've taken a week off.
Really?
How much more tense I am. So I've journaled for years and still have all the journals.
What? You haven't like read through some and like, oh no, these need to burn.
There's definitely, and oh, that's probably a whole other episode, because my coming out story was around someone found my journal and the invasion of privacy and that whole
experience. Had a similar situation growing up with some sexual experiences as a young lady in high school. And then my mom and I, she found my journal and it did not go over well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was, I mean, the catalyst of the coming out. And so with that said, I've always been kind of reflective and, you know, my first date with my partner, I was like, hey, okay, let's get dinner. We got dinner. And I was like, I want a house and kids and like all these different things, where in the LGBTQ plus community, there isn't the assumed gender roles or path. Mm-hmm. So I just, you know, where my friends, they didn't want those things necessarily. Some friends were like, oh, I want to go party and do these different things. And so I've always felt pretty like connected to the path. And journeys, yoga has assisted in that journey. And
when you say connected to the path, do you just mean a path? Because there's so many different paths, but you already had a vision of your path. Is that what you're saying?
Well, so kind of like we were chatting just before we got started, getting in that downward dog position on your mat.
Mm-hmm. It's like going home.
It's going home. It's like connecting to that path. And mm-hmm. as human beings having a spiritual experience, we don't always, I mean, I look at it as magnetic force fields. We as humans are, the law of attraction has always been very close to my kind of philosophy. And so getting into that position, no matter where you are, what's going on, your soul knows where you're going.
Okay.
Especially when you reconnect with it in a warm space on a mat. And so you don't always, when I say the path, I don't necessarily know what that means.
So you're on your first date with your partner, and you already are telling him, this is my vision for the future and what I desire. And you're saying it felt like you were on the path when you were having that conversation with him.
So fast, or rewinding slightly. So I had gone out to LA, and I was, prior to having gone out to LA, I just felt like, actually I had more debt than I've ever had in my entire life. Mm-hmm. And again, we kind of chatted about this too. Yoga and the journey gets real when it gets kind of nitty and gritty. Mm-hmm. And so I had so much debt, and I shouldn't have taken this trip in like societal terms. And what I mean by that is I had this debt. I should be working. I should be doing these things. But something was like, I need to go to LA.
So you went to LA for a trip or to move there?
For a trip. So okay. LA Pride is just iconic. And I'd gone years before.
Yeah.
And during the summer, gay prides pre-COVID were just like these amazing parties in different cities.
Yes. I've gone to Seattle for it like three years in a row, and it was a blast.
Yeah, so you can pick different cities, and usually each city has a different weekend.
Yeah.
So it becomes a bit obnoxious. But anyway, I was like, I'm going to go out to LA. And I went alone, and I booked a random ticket and left like the day after I decided to go. It was really cheap, and got out there, got invited to this party that was kind of had this negative connotation after hours.
Okay.
And during the day, it's not grungy, but during the night, it's kind of the perception of this particular party.
Is it like a little rowdy, a little seedy?
Yeah, it's just very sexual after hours.
Oh, that happens.
And so, you know, and I never partook in any of that kind of stuff. I just was like, I want to go just get out of Minnesota.
Explore, check it out.
And I'd always gone with friends before. I wanted to go by myself. But really, I think it comes back to, I just felt whatever it was, I had to go. booked the trip, went out, stayed with random friends, kind of couch hopping a little bit, which is the best way to do it when you're in a I had a backpack.
And how old were you?
This would have probably been a couple years ago, so 22.
Great.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, perfect age. Yeah. Absolutely.
With a backpack. Like, I don't need a suitcase, check bag. No. Like, we're on off quick. And I'd seen my partner at a party the night before and, you know, didn't think anything of it. Well, I did think of something of it, but it wasn't like...
You noticed him.
Yeah. We were like catching eyes, but for whatever reason, like, we didn't get connected that night. And the next day we arrived at this party and I had seen him, and I actually took a video that I... on my phone, and it was recorded at 3:33 p.m. which angel number. So it's some
what
of those
does the
things.
333 mean?
I don't know exactly which number means what, but it does to me. It's kind of like a spiritual reminder.
It's a bit of a signifier. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that was prior. Like, I look back and I see that and I'm like, oh, there he was in the video. Shortly thereafter, he comes up to introduce himself. Actually, before that, I was going to book a ticket to go to this event, like this clubbing event that night, which I don't really love because it's very, just like a lot of drug culture and, you know, it's late, late night. Like, it goes till the sun comes up, which just takes a different kind of substance that I was never about.
Yeah.
And so my friends were giving me this pressure, and it felt like this social pressure. If I don't go, what are my plans going to be? I'm kind of staying on their couch, so I feel like I kind of have to go.
Right. Oh, I know that feeling.
And I tried to put it off. Like, I was like, for whatever reason, I just can't get on. I'm not in alignment with going.
Yeah.
There's something in the ethers. My spirit is just like, So I pushed it off a little bit. And at the party, I decided, okay, I'll book the ticket. So I go online and I'm putting all the information in. Click submit. And it's loading to process my ticket. And I look up, and that's when my partner introduces himself. And I look back down and the screen crashes. So it didn't process my ticket.
Oh my gosh, I just got chills.
So I'm like, and I think if I were really in my humanness prior to that experience or experiences like those, I would have kind of dulled out. But being as spiritual as I feel that I am in the practice through meditation and yoga and
journaling.
You're
attuned to notice things like this.
I'm like, okay, like, dialed in. So we were chatting, and very, very quickly we're talking about meditation. Like, we're at this party in LA where a lot of the conversation is not very great usually. It's very surface
party
level.
Culture.
Yes. And he's like, oh, look, you know, we're talking about meditation. And very quickly we both look at each other like, what are we doing here? And he's like, what are you doing tonight? And I was like, oh, I don't have plans. And he's like, oh, you could go do this, you could do that. You know, he's older than me. And I think he was trying to, like, not come across like he was. I don't know. I was like,
he's sussing you out and what your interests are.
Yeah. He's like, you just go, you could do this, you could go do that. You know, he lived
there. You're young, you're beautiful, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. And I'm like, I said, or you could take me to dinner.
I love that.
I'm just like, let's go to dinner. So we got in an Uber, we went to dinner. And that's when I was like, okay, kind of having dated in the community and just like, you know, it can be very physical and there's just not a lot of substance to it. And for me, the element of like being intellectual and conversational, like those pieces have always been important. And so I was just like, with my past experience, I was like, okay, here's what I'm kind of looking for.
Which is so smart, because when I was 22, I got sucked into the party culture. I was disconnected from my family. I was disconnected from myself. And I definitely just kind of followed whoever, because I hadn't quite found myself. And I would dabble in spirituality, but I, as far as dating goes, oh, so lost. I'm just like, whatever happens, like, he has a nice smile, let's just figure it out. It wasn't like, are we in a similar trajectory? Do we have similar values? Oh, good for you.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I just was like, I think because we're maybe in heteronormative settings, you know, it's assumed that you want this or that.
Everything's assumed.
Here's the roles. Like, the male should ask first in the date. There's all that's out the door.
Yeah, which is something I really admire about the LGBTQ community, is nothing's assumed. Relationship models
aren't assumed. Sexual experiences aren't assumed. Like, who's this? Who's going to be the aggressor? Who's going to be the receiver? And I like that there's a lot more openness in conversations about, okay, what do we want our relationship model to look like? What does exploring our sexual compatibility look like? Versus, all right, well, there we go. Now we're done. We did it.
Yep. And that's it. Yeah. And that is always evolving. Mm-hmm. And you hear stories with friends that are married and they're maybe open. There's these different things. But to me, being out in this LA setting where it's, you know, you're stereotypical like LA. I mean, it's flashy lights and the good parties.
Glamour.
Yeah. And I just wanted to kind of put it out there. And you know, talk about monogamy and these things, which I think can be a little bit intense, like in the first conversation. And yet I also just felt like I got it off my chest a little bit.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a good feeling.
So that is, and we're like on this tangent a little bit, but that's kind of what led me to Boise ultimately. And so going back to the concept of this path and this journey and being on that, I would never guess that I would be in Boise, Idaho.
Yeah.
And so the path really, you know, through that, I found a yoga studio out in LA. Actually, my studio in Minneapolis, there were a large, I don't know how to describe it, like this large company that had locations throughout the country. So I don't know if you've heard of Modo Yoga.
Yes.
So you could go to a studio. If you had unlimited membership, you go to a studio in Minneapolis and LA and
York,
you could do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was great. I could just pop and do a class in LA. And I mean, that was amazing.
And was that the style you were talking about earlier before we recorded, that it was silence, breath work, you'd move at your own pace? There's
Modo music. Had so many different, again, pre-COVID, there was just so many different, there's a broad schedule of different things. And again, I think in California, LA, there was just such a community of experienced yogis that, I mean, there was one instructor who was like ex-NFL. Super interesting concept.
Cool.
Yeah, like he came from like a sports background. So yeah. Just so everyone, and I think that again, that's what makes yoga yoga, is everyone brings their experience to the mat. And so that, you know, again, going back to that journey, that was a huge part of feeling connected, even though in my like human experience, it does, like, I don't know the answers.
What was your first yoga class like?
So my background, like, I was in, like, I played football in high school and lacrosse a little bit, and but I also coached gymnastics, so I did competitive cheerleading.
I
think it was like middle school. I've always been more flexible, and like
You're crazy flexible.
So I just like
your heels touch the floor in downward facing dog.
Like, and I didn't know that was like an objective.
It's not an objective, but it shows your flexibility. So I'm your teacher. I walk in the room immediately, first down dog. When you are the yoga teacher and you say down dog, it's how you can read the room. Like, okay, what level are we working with today? Do they have rounded shoulders? Like, where's their heel placement? Where's their hand placement? And so you can kind of see what level you're working with when you get everyone in down dog. And I see Tom's down dog, like, first time I have you in my class. And I was like, oh my gosh, we got a yogi. Flexible. His heels can touch the mat.
Oh, I mean, I did competitive cheerleading in middle school before, like, I got made fun of insanely. You know, middle school, it's that transition out of, where you know, in elementary school, I was like doing different things and artistic. But then you get into high school and it's like, or even eighth grade, you know what I mean? Everyone talks about like late middle school days, just not friendly. And
no.
So I stopped doing competitive cheerleading and then started coaching gymnastics. And it was high school gymnastics at the high school I went to. And it was straightforward for me because it was like the youth program. So it wasn't like, I mean, I think we got up to some high school level stuff, but it wasn't these insane like passes on the floor, like tumbling passes. Like, I could coach most of the stuff.
What's a tumbling pass?
So you start at one corner of the floor and you do like a round off back handspring tuck.
Oh my gosh.
So you have like your kind of, they call it a pass.
Okay.
And so in my coaching abilities, it wasn't like I was doing anything insane, but I could run along and do like spot a round off back handspring, you know. And so that, I had done some coaching there and that kind of led me into, oh, yoga. And actually it was my mom who, she had gotten into it. And I think this was maybe 6 years ago. So I think, I mean, I know that yoga has become more popular, but I think back then it was kind of starting to get more, like there was more studios or starting to be more studios. And she had gone to one and I had gone as a guest, I think, in a class or something and somehow got into it. And
so your mom took you to your first yoga class?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I just brought her last week.
Yes, I got to meet your mom. You took her to, was it my class or someone's class?
Someone's class.
I was at the desk though when you came out. And then you went to Sun Valley.
Yeah, it was great. And, but yeah, that's kind of when I got started with yoga. And it was just such a easy transition. And
yeah,
I think you consider with any kind of physical activity, the level of physicality and you think about it in terms of like, what's my net gain from an exercise perspective? Like,
I don't think a lot of people think like that, but
well, maybe it's just my background in like the male, like very male dominated sports background, like in football, you deadlifted to get like these benefits for football or so maybe that's kind of what made me
interesting.
And maybe that's, I think there is this like element that yoga is feminine.
So how did you analyze that?
Well, I think at that time I was a little bit more, you know, again, I wasn't competitive cheerleader and then kind of into the gymnastic stuff. I was growing into myself to be able to be like, I can go to a yoga class because I'm confident enough in myself and my sexuality. I don't know why I have this feeling of like it being more feminine. Most times at a 9:30 a.m. class, I'm the only male.
Yeah. So if you were to look at certain times of the day in terms of statistic wise, okay, most women come after they drop their kids off from school in the 9:30 a.m. class, you're going to find more women.
Right.
Most men arrive after work. So the 5:30 p.m. class, you're going to see most men. But then it also depends on work schedule, work life, kid life, who's going to show up to the classes at what times. Most of the time, the college students would come at the 7 p.m. classes. They'd be rolling in late. And then I'm never there at the 6 a.m., so I can't tell you who those psychos are.
Right. And I got into a, like, I was in one of those early morning kicks. But I just think in my early yogi days, and maybe even still today, it is female dominated.
Yeah, which is interesting because it originally in India was male dominated. Women weren't allowed to practice. And then women in the U.S. really took hold of it, which has been really fascinating.
And so that's what, I don't know why I think of it in terms of like workout video or like what's, I think people who maybe aren't familiar with yoga are like, oh, it's like a stretch, but it's a workout, but there's so many variations.
Yeah, I thought I was going to a stretching class when I went to my first hot yoga class, and I was like, whoa,
yeah.
What is this?
It's really one of those things I think, yeah, you have to experience. And one thing you mentioned in your one of your episodes was when you're searching a studio, like try all the studios because all the different energies and the way they do things are a little bit different. But yeah, I'm generally around many females in a yoga class. I don't see a huge representation of males for whatever reason. And I think it's true that the flexibility of my schedule allows me to go in at those more convenient times or those times
the times that are convenient for moms.
Right. Yeah. Like coincidentally. And I think that, that's again, that, so my schedule is pretty random and I'm, commission-based freelance, like
tell us what you do for work.
So I'm in real estate.
What does that mean?
It's so funny.
It's so broad.
And it's so funny because, you know, especially now with how competitive the markets are, it feels like being a realtor is like being a barista because the barriers to entry aren't that high. So when I say real estate, generally residential, like that's what I do. Residential real estate, if you're buying or selling a house.
And you're a realtor.
Realtor. Yep. And again, I feel like when I say that, it's like, oh, okay. Like there's so many realtors.
Yes. But you're full time.
But I'm full time.
This isn't like you're just doing your own house or you're having fun.
Yeah. And it's, you know, so I started when I was I was 18, got into real estate in high school.
How did you make that decision at 18 years old? I'm going to get my real estate license.
I think it goes back to that kind of out experience. Like it was a little bit of my beard in a way. And I, when I say beard, like a distraction, everyone else was in heterosexual terms was like dating and doing these different things.
Mm-hmm.
And I had come out and I was like, you know what? I'm going to do real estate. And, there was something motivating about differentiating myself and almost like creating positive publicity in a way.
Okay.
Because there was all this talk of like, oh, Tom's out. And, you know, I mean, it's just so I got into real estate and I mean, it was in my family. So my mom was in a loan originator in the mortgage business growing up. So I subconsciously kind of had the terminology.
My grandfather was in real estate and then my mom did it for a short time. And I remember being in second grade with my mom and she would take me to look at houses and she would bring her disposable camera and she would let me help take photos for the listings. So her little 7-year-old daughter had her Kodak disposable camera and I would help take pictures of the rooms and pictures of the houses.
So cute. Yeah.
And now it's very different. But.
Oh, it's so different. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, so that was in high school. So I did go to college for a couple years, but it just wasn't, you know, I've always felt more free by not having like an intense amount of structure.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got into real estate when I was 18, went down to school in Florida, like got as far away from my hometown.
Minnesota.
Yeah. And did that for a couple of years and it was still doing real estate related stuff, but I was like, oh, I have to be, if I'm going to do real estate, I should be like in a suit and tie. So I did commercial real estate finance for 2 years and it was just like, not my thing. It was too office-y and dry. And
okay.
But I still have that experience, which is great because I now have investor clients and I can kind of utilize that experience. I think after leaving high school, going out to Florida in college and then having a series of events that led me back to Minnesota in a similar way to the way you explained where, you know, it was completely random and felt like the end of the world. Like I'd left to go to school, like everyone's supposed to go to school and go to college. And I go out and I don't love it and it's expensive. So I come back and was in a relationship that fell apart. And then I found myself on an inflatable mattress in my parents' basement. Like, and it was just that moment. But that's when I got into my like 5 or 6 a.m. yoga stint.
Really? You're sleeping on an inflatable mattress in your parents' basement. You went back home and there's that feeling like, oh no, I went back home. And you're up at 5:30 a.m. going to yoga?
Well, so I dropped out of college and, I was like, this is not working and got a job at a real estate office back in Minnesota and entry level consisted of, at least with this particular company, a lot of dialing. So I would literally be on a dialer where the phone would consistently ring and it would go through a Rolodex of numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And hi, this is Tom Wheeler with so-and-so Realty.
Fantastic voice.
Yeah. And I did that to kind of get my business going and that was grueling. I mean, it was rough.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine doing it now with like all the influx of robo calls and all that.
Oh yeah.
And so I was in an office setting, so I knew I had to get to the studio. I mean, I feel like I needed to set the tone for the day or like be grounded because going into that setting where I'm like in a phone booth, essentially having these conversations.
Yeah.
It was just like
That's
what
tough.
I needed. And, so yeah, I did that for a couple of years. And then when I met my partner, moved out here, I've opened my second location. So I have a real estate company in Minnesota that I co-own with my mom, who's my broker, which is amazing.
Oh, I love that. Family. And, keep it in the family.
Yep. And then I have a real estate company here now with my partner.
What's the name of your company?
So the company here is Homefound Group. Okay. And it's brokered by Silver Creek. And that's just a local brokerage.
Mm-hmm.
I think when we get the experience and volume, we would do our own thing.
Mm-hmm.
I talked a little bit about this in a different podcast, but coming to Idaho, there's just a huge amount of religion and there's these just conservative elements that I was so unaware of. So
how does that affect real estate? Do people need extra bedrooms for their large families?
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest impact is on a level where the realtors aren't necessarily aware of their implicit biases and how easily they can violate fair housing laws.
Oh my gosh.
Happens daily. And especially in a state where we're generally homogenous in how we look and our backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of white people.
There's a lot of white people here.
And so I didn't realize how much that work, how important that work was to me and my business in Minnesota, because Minnesota was a little, Minneapolis, more diverse. I mean, there was just organizations and things that existed. So coming out here, I've gotten into nonprofit work for the LGBTQ community.
Because there wasn't an organization here.
No organizations. You know, so it's called the Alliance is the nonprofit. So the chapter that I preside over as president is the Alliance Idaho. And the mission is to advocate for fair housing for the LGBTQ plus community.
Is there a website for that? How do you find that?
Realestatealliance.org.
Okay.
So in 27 states in America, it's legal to discriminate against sexual orientation and gender. In the state of Idaho, we have 14 cities that have protections.
What does that mean? Does that mean if me and my same-sex partner go to buy a house and the owners of that home could be like, not for you?
Mm-hmm. They could see Sarah and Susan and be like, you know, in again, competitive market, but it doesn't really matter market conditions. You know, the seller gets to choose the offer. And if they may not even know they're choosing it because they have, you know, a implicit bias for something.
I have to throw my really wonderful landlord under the bus for a second. when I was looking for my rental, it's an old house. It's a classic. It looks like a North End home, but it's closer to Boise State. Love this house. It's wonderful. And I was speaking to the landlord, and so it's not through a property management company. It's just her. She used to live in the house. It's a beautiful home. And I was like, it's just me. I'd like to fill out an application, and here's all my info. And she kind of made this comment, which she immediately like apologized for. But she said, I really just want a couple in here. I'd like to have a guy in here who could be really handy and fix stuff. And it's old house and I don't want to get calls all the time. She's just being really honest. And I just kind of paused, taken aback, and looked down at the ground. And I just was dealing with some like relationship drama at the time. And I was like, yeah, I wish I had a partner that I was moving in with, but it's just me. And she was like, oh my God, I can't believe what I just said. She's like, I'm divorced too. Like, oh my gosh. So I think I kind of got it because of that. She ended up calling me like 2 or 3 weeks later and was like, I got your application. I love it. You're in. But that was an interesting moment for me where I was like, wow, I didn't even think of that as a thing.
And that's a fair housing, quote unquote, fair housing violation.
Yeah. So, like, sorry, there's not a man with me to fix stuff. Mm-hmm. Oh.
And so that stuff happens every day. And yeah, a lot of people don't really know it's happening. So I feel like my role and responsibility as a realtor is to, I mean, I'm helping people locate their home.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm saying, oh, like this area, you don't want to be here, you want to be here, I'm putting my implicit bias and I'm violating.
Interesting.
A lot of laws there. But
yeah.
Because real estate can be so cutthroat, and so, I mean, it's commission based. Mm-hmm. So it's very random. And, you know, initially I started out in an office setting and I would dial, and it was all about time blocking. And it was just.
What's like, time blocking?
Time blocking is like you take out your calendar and you say, for this hour of the day, on these days of the week, I will do this.
Okay.
I will follow up with clients, mm-hmm, or I will make 10 phone calls. Like, so you time block your entire calendar.
Mm.
Almost out of this, I think, feeling that as a realtor, because you don't have a schedule.
Gotcha.
Build it out, because that's security.
Okay.
And so I was kind of trained in my early realtor days to do all that stuff. And I found myself like so unhappy with the structure of it all. And yoga was always what, like, that was the best part of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I no longer worked for that team, developed my own kind of experience and had enough of my own kind of what I needed to feel comfortable doing it myself, completely revamped what that looks like. And now it's more centered around spirituality and yoga.
Wow.
I mean, my clients, like, I will bring them through home and being empathic and energetic and
yes,
spiritually connected, I'm like, I can tell a little bit.
You can vibe it. Like,
yeah,
this is going to vibe with you guys. Or,
yeah,
okay, what do you guys feel? What do you think?
Yeah. And I, you know, it's funny. A lot of people I work with know, okay, Tom's in yoga from 9:30 to 10. Where I think there's this negative kind of connotation around you know, oh, that's like an hour that you should be working.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and for me, working consumer hours where most of my, a lot of the like physical showing activities generally happen later in the day. Nonetheless, for me, getting my yoga practice in is key to the success of my day.
Yes.
And prior to that, it starts with a meditation, insight timer. I try, like right now I'm plateauing at 10 minutes and I would, you know, okay. For whatever reason, I wish I could just zone out.
That's the practice though.
That's the practice.
Yeah.
But also like from a human experience, building the timeout and being accountable to showing up for that and how significant that 10 minutes is in starting the day.
Yes.
So meditation, then I journal, and then I have my coffee and I go to yoga. And if I can do that, it's a good day.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about breath work because I can hear you in the room. You've got the deep breath going on. It inspires those around you. People have come to me after class. They're like, I don't know who that guy was, but he inspired me to breathe so deep. And I really enjoyed practicing next to him. Who's that guy? Like, oh, you're talking about Tom. And I remember you had mentioned that you were reading this book called Breath or Breathe.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's on my Amazon queue right now.
So good.
So how did you get into breath work?
Well, I think it goes back to that yogi journey. And I think there's so many layers to it. Like you've mentioned in the throughout this podcast, you deal with grief. You deal with all these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think yoga, especially more like silent or more like less distractive forms of yoga can really bring up a lot of, I think any yoga will bring up a lot of things. I mean, there'll be times when I'm coming to yoga class and I'm just like, that's like I'm having the experience, emotional experience that I didn't even know I was feeling.
Who knew that a physical practice would be an emotional practice?
It's one and the same, right? And it was just like, so I think in starting out in yoga, it was like I kind of mentioned, oh, from, you know, a physical exercise perspective, like I felt really good. I sweat really amazing. Like I sweat so good. And you talk about if you had wine the night before or whatever was in your diet, like that was wrung out. So for me now, like if I'm slightly hungover, like I need to go to yoga and just get it out of my system and be done with it. You know,
chug some coconut water, sweat it out,
be done, you know,
apologize to my body.
Right. Right. Wash my mat or my towels a couple times. Cause it's all there.
Yep. It is.
But I think if you're not doing yoga or some sort of physical practice, because it, you know, the trilogy of spirituality is mind, body, soul. And in yoga, you know, what led me there was physical need of some sort. But then the layers of the practice are like, okay, mind is there. So you're in your warrior two, looking over the tips of your fingers and everything is uncomfortable.
Yep.
And if you can take a seat behind all of the chatter, then if you can take that into your day, like that's powerful. And so for me, breath work through their yogi journey and just different classes, I began to realize how impactful that is. And I know in every class, you know, it's like breathing through your nose and exhale through your nose and make the like ocean sound, the ujjayi breath.
People often hold their breath and don't realize it. After class, they'll say to me, I didn't even know I was holding my breath until you reminded me to breathe. And when you hold your breath, you're holding your energy in, you're going to create anxiety. So it's best to breathe deep.
And I think you don't appreciate the instructor's reminder of breath constantly until you get into it. And you have stories like that where it's like, oh, I wasn't even breathing. I mean, there's research studies coming out now where people will look at their phones and they'll have a reduction in oxygen intake because they're so distracted that they're checking out of the like physical experience of breathing. And so in that book, Breathe or Breath, I think it's one of them. Really amazing research on the effects of breathing through your nose.
I'll find it. I'll put it in the show notes.
So good. Yeah, that and just different yoga classes that were like silent. I think those ones really helped me check in because sometimes I've gone to classes where like the music's so loud that it's distracting. And I know you, I think it sounds like you just had an episode you recorded where you talked about those different distractions.
Yes.
And I think those are part of the spiritual journey, the meditation. I mean, it was a moving meditation.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as I tapped into that, I realized I could bring that through my day. And if I was frustrated or I had, you know, something happen, I have to remind myself to just take deep breaths and feel the physiological effects of that.
I think relying on your body to take care of itself is fine. But when you add the extra element of consciousness and awareness to your breathing, I don't know, I get into that flow in yoga with the breath. So when you're able to get the physical with the breath, with the mental focus, there's something about just like dropping into that zone. We call it flow, that flow state, whether you're writing in your journal, you're a painter. For me, it's yoga. Even sequencing and choreographing my yoga class, like I can get into a little flow. Even teaching yoga, I feel like if I get my breath right, then I'm able to articulate and I'm able to tune into the energy in the room. And breath is all a part of that.
And I think that you bring up such a good point. I mean, a flow state is when you lose track of time and you're just really submerged into this creative experience, whatever it may be. You know, mentally, we don't know how to always achieve that. And I think that's why yoga, it's like practicing that muscle a little bit or strengthening that flow muscle, because that's what it should feel like when I'm at work, when I'm with my partner, when I'm doing work activities, when I'm off my yoga mat,
how can I keep that
flow feeling?
Yeah.
Or like that connectedness. And it starts that for me, that's getting there is breath. Like the breath is the physical ingredient that is required, or like the puzzle piece to tap into the mental effects. Because again, physiologically, a deep, deep breath like reduces cortisol in the blood, period. You know, I mean, you can feel it. If you take a deep breath and you feel it wash over your body. You know, there's all this, plenty of research around taking like time off in a silent space and just the creativity you'll tap into. Or like, you know, when you randomly, you're kind of on a walk and all of a sudden it's like, that was the solution to this issue that I tried to dig in.
That happens to me in Shavasana all the time. Even in yoga this morning, I was having a hard time getting into my yoga because I realized I forgot to send this email and it was driving me crazy. I was like, should I just leave and send the email and come back? And I was like, you're on your yoga mat, so nothing else matters. It can wait. And even though I say that to my students all the time, as a practitioner, I even have to say it to myself. I'm like, okay, just leave it off the mat. This is your time. Just focus on what's happening now. And it can be so difficult. I forgot what I was talking about.
Then you get to your Shavasana.
Oh, right. And then I'll be in Shavasana. I'm like, oh my gosh, now I already have the plan for that email that I didn't send yet. And now I'm excited to get to my email after yoga because I just have the perfect solution to that problem that we were discussing.
And that's alignment.
Surprisingly showed up.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's alignment, in my opinion. You know, again, we have like this societal expectation that solving the world's problems is like this intense struggle. Like it's hard work and it takes a lot of energy.
Oh my gosh. How do you feel when you're talking to someone and they're anxious and they're fired up? We got to fix this. We got to work this out. And I think as somebody who, I'm not religious, but I am in tune with letting go of attachments, of just like, let's be casual about this. It's going to work itself out and we can create these solutions, but we don't need to do it right this second, right now, and get all upset and let your blood pressure, like, baby, your neck is popping out. Like, take a breath. We're going to work it out. It's going to be fine.
Well, and how can we expect to be open to our organic solutions to things when we're so bogged down? Like for me, like a 15-minute nap is amazing. It's kind of meditation. Like I get into Savasana pose in the middle of the day if I have to. I mean, some days or some weeks there's more of this. Other weeks there's not. But I get into like that Savasana pose where I make sure like my shoulder blades are tucked in and you know, everything's and I'm on the floor, and like 15 minutes of that, I'm like refreshed. mm-hmm. and I'm tuned in and I have more access and clarity.
What's going to be more productive? Is it a 15-minute Shavasana or like shoveling sugar and coffee down your throat, trying to get it all done? I think taking that moment to reset helps people be more productive. And I think there are studies that say this because corporate yoga has been blowing up. Like so many corporations are offering more wellness programs, more yoga meditation programs, just to create that happy, healthy employee.
Yeah, that's that kind of stillness or like that break. Mm-hmm. And I think that's, so when COVID hit it, that was so tough because when I go to a yoga studio, I'm like, I have nothing on. And it's like dedicated time.
The phone's out of the room.
Yep. And then I'm just there for it. And I think we all have the same thoughts where like, especially when you lay down mm-hmm. to start the class, is when you're getting that inflow of all these things mm-hmm. that I need to get done. And since when do I, like, that's not living to be mm-hmm. constantly chasing a to-do list. What's living is that moment after you've worked through the class and you're laying there and you're reminded of your humanness and mm-hmm. the joy, the invaluable and in the joy of just laying there and feeling your heartbeat and the heat and like that sense of accomplishment from a physical release
yes.
that we chase through work and food and all these, you know, we desire these consumptive things to achieve a feeling of
that's like very stillness. American culture, first yeah. world culture. It reminds me the first time I went to Nicaragua for 2 weeks, and the first week we were like, gosh, why is it take everyone for like forever to get back to us? Why is it taking so long to organize trips? How come the restaurant says they're open at 9 and no one's there? And I remember like all week we're just like, let's go do this at this time and let's go get it done. We want to go surfing here and we want to go here and we want to do it all at this time and we'll have lunch at this time. And all the people around us in the area would be like, yeah, well, around 3. Well, around 3, like at 3? Around 3. Mm-hmm. Okay. But on the second week I was there, it's like I finally got it. And I was like, I'm so glad I took 2 weeks instead of 1 week. Because on the second week I felt, oh, I get it. Mm. What's the hurry? Mm-hmm. Let's enjoy our life. We'll do it around then. And so when I came back from that trip, I was still really immersed in that feeling. And I could see everyone around me being like, okay, here at this time, we got to get this done and call this person. And we'll do dinner here. And then we'll have to go to work here this time. And I was like, why? Let's do it around then. We'll get it done. I'll feel it out.
Yeah.
That was interesting.
We really do have, I mean, I'm learning now my business after having been doing this work, real estate work and the nonprofit work. It feels like the world is ending when like a deal is going to fall through, or like it feels like you're constantly subject to responding to an email, a text, a call. And yeah. I'm learning the skill of having to decide what truly is important. Like, not that getting an email, a call, or a text is not important, but realizing that
it doesn't need to affect your health in a negative way.
Right. Like, I don't have to jump on this right this moment.
Yeah.
You know? And then, again, that goes back to the yoga practice, because you show up on your mat and you're like, when you're first there and maybe there's a bunch of stuff that's happened that morning, you want to do what feels intuitive, which is to leave the relaxing yoga class and go get all these things done so you can relax. When in reality, You have to prioritize and build space for that, because
you time blocking your yoga.
You kind of are. You're like, this is on the calendar, and anyone that I'm going to work with, anyone, you know, here's the expectation. I'm just not available. And I will tell my clients, like, I'm going to go, I have to go do my yoga class. Yeah. So, and that, you know, I'll even joke and I'm going to go align my chakras, or I'm going to get the energy right. Like, this is a part of my work. This is how I show up in the way that I do for my clients in a unique way that proves to be successful time and time again, is incorporating an element of mindfulness.
Mm.
You know, like, I have to remind anxious first time buyers in a competitive market that let's take a deep breath and realize that, like, ultimately it will work out as it's supposed to. It feels like this is kind of, you know, you want to get it in control, but when you actually let go and just let the journey kind of unfold,
yes,
you'll find the right one. It'll find you, and we'll look back at this, you know, and share a deep breath. I love
that. I love that mindset. Well, I absolutely have to ask you this. What have you overheard at yoga?
You know, and it's so funny because I was thinking about this. Because most classes are silent, I'm like, what have I overheard? And I feel like in my spiritual space, I can feel a collective, like what I hear in a yoga, what I overhear is this collective energy sometimes. You know, you can kind of tap into the class. It's like we're here as community members in this safe space. And that's one of the things I love about yoga is you can show up in whatever shape or form you are and adapt the practice to you. And being in that physical space, I overhear that and feel that on a cellular level. And I think, again, going back to with COVID, I thrive off that group setting. I mean, there's a collective to that. And I think as a human race, we're, you know, we're ingrained to have social connection and be in community. And there's so much that happens in that space.
Yes.
I don't know if that's...
You can feel it.
Yeah.
You can feel the difference in a 5-person class versus a 25-person class. That energy is felt. And so even when I use terms like energy, people can be like, energy, what is she talking about?
Right.
But you do feel the difference. There is something to it.
And I, you know, to the concept of overhearing at yoga, you're in the group of people who are being vulnerable, showing up, and... You know, again, the yoga practice, you do experience like these emotions you maybe never thought you had. And I've had conversations outside yoga after the class. And it's someone who's like, you know, just inquiring about my practice or me doing the same. And like that gravitational pull is, there's something to that. Like, for example, Candace's classes, her flow classes, I'm like, for whatever, I can't put my finger on it, but I'm like so tuned in to a flow class with Candace. And then, you know, I've gone and done some skin stuff with her and I feel like she's reading my mind. I'm like, you know, there's just this like energetic spiritual element to this shared class and practice. And it's always changing.
Sounds like you're in attunement. You get your mind right. You're getting your chakras aligned. Tom, I have to thank you so much for coming on here today. Thank you so much for being on Overheard at Yoga. I just admire you. I think your practice is so beautiful to watch. And I'm just blown away that you're as young as you are, but as this old soul. I can feel it. It can be felt. I appreciate you sharing your journey with us here. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely. Well, and thank you for taking the role as leading at Hollywood Market and taking the time to lead classes, because I think you're having a huge impact on people that they probably don't vocalize to you. And so I want to thank you for that and having this podcast and cultivating this connection, because I think it's just so important today. So I appreciate it. And thank you so much for having me on here. As soon as when I heard an episode, I was like, oh my gosh, that's like, no one's doing this. Like, Overheard at Yoga. That's amazing. So thank you so much for having me.
Yes. Thanks. Bye guys. Bye.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Leave me a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. And I want to hear from you. Please send me your Overheard at Yoga stories. Tell me about your yoga journey, what you love about your home studio, or the funny thing you overheard at yoga. Find me on Instagram at overheardat.yoga to submit. There are so many different styles of yoga and opinions about yoga, but the one thing I've seen in all my travels to different studios is yoga brings a community together. Namaste!